tonight possible and all the other nights that we've had and all the other times we're going to have before the end of next week. And this time, Al Hugs is going to introduce.
Thank you, Margaret. This is indeed a very auspicious occasion for Jeanette and myself. Most of you, or certainly many of you, know Adano and his background. I'll relate it very, very briefly. Adano was born in British Guiana of an Oriental and a Spanish Carib Indian, an Oriental father and a Spanish Carib Indian mother. He has a background both in Catholicism and in Buddhism, which I guess puts the lie to what Rudyard Kipling say, that the East and West will never meet, because obviously the East and West are meeting. He came to this country and briefly, and then spent some time in Montreal in Canada with the Self-Realization Center there. He was a disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, is, and also spent some very interesting time with Native North Americans, Canada, the United States, Mexico. And in 1969, he became a Swami in the Sarasvati discipline. And since that, for a number of years, he has a Adano has a clinic in Houston, the Adano Lai Clinic, and for he is a practicing naturopathic physician. And he's also an expert in acupuncture, acupressure, and in Chinese medical treatment. I've had the privilege of knowing Adano for not very long. I know him as a very gentle, very humble, very beautiful person. And it's our honor, Jeanette and I, to have you in our home tonight, and to have you with us. And Adano, the evening is yours.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, and my wonderful host, and Margaret for getting me here. Sidonia, this is my second visit here. Not in this spot, but on the actual town of Sidonia. Years ago, I came here, and it's where I met Chief War Eagle. And we became very good friends. And those who know him, his name is Andy Scott. He lives in Taylor, Arizona. What was in Sidonia while passing through here, and at the same time Kriyananda was doing a retreat. We crossed paths, and that's how I met my friend Chief Wari. And I always promised to come back to Sidonia. And so today is more of a treat and a fulfillment.
Is that
I
Try to hold on to the peace after you open your eyes. After you come out of meditation, let you evaluate the depth of your meditation. How long the peace stayed with you in the active time, active activities of your life. We ask talk on the Sermon on the Mount. Most of us have been exposed to what Jesus taught at the Sermon on the Mount. But there are other things concerning that sermon which the average person is not aware of, or even those who wrote it and recorded it did not infer too much. There is a relationship going on between the multitude, the student, and the teacher. Intimate exchange of spiritual ideas between the teacher and a student is not recognized or experienced by the multitude. That is why this particular process exists, a sort of a teacher-student relationship. The general public cannot be exposed to a direct psychophysical transformation on certain spiritual experiences. But between the teacher and the student, that psychophysical exchange occurs every instant. In a group meeting like this, what we call satsang, or when two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. Many of us don't even know the extent of that statement, what is actually occurring. It takes many years to uncover that intimate exchange between a realized person and the student. The Sermon on the Mount was not just given for the public. It was given primarily for those 12 men who lived with Jesus and how to break their internal frustrations in their meditational process and how to arrive at an inward accomplishment and a very deep, intimate psychophysical exchange, a transformation of their body, an actual bodily transformation for those men. It's more than just a sermon on top of a mountain. To the average person, it sounds like a sermon on the mountain. So for the student on the path of truth, it's his encounter with God in the realized man that opens avenues of power locked up in the student. For instance, if a student is suffering with frustration from being hurt by people who pick up on them, but they can't release it. How is the teacher going to break through that pattern and heal that person to open that they will become a channel for that teacher? You may give a counsel, some type of a statement that a student can relate to, the general public can also relate to, but would it help the general public? The student is a person that the teacher is more concerned with, because he is the one that's going to have to carry on when the teacher is gone, in that process of self-understanding, the process of self-transformation. The general public will come and go. So in the Eastern countries, they say a teacher is like an elephant. He has a pair of tusks that keeps away the public from attacking him. And his teeth is what he chews his food with, and that's what the organs are fed with, and that's the disciple. His actual body is his disciple, where he chews his food and nurtures it, but the tusks keeps away everybody from hurting him. The general public is not a disciple in the presence of realized people. Only the intimacy that occurs with those who are ready for the path, that has an interconnectedness. And that's why this type of tradition goes on. It will not stop. When Jesus was asked the way of truth, he says, "None come unto the Father but by me." The general public didn't understand what he was talking about. But suffer to be so, for this is the way of righteousness. It is the transformation that occurs between the realized person and the unrealized person as a bond, which they call teacher-disciple relationship. And when the two have arrived at that transformation, there is no teacher-disciple. It's enough that they are friends, because they've both broken the internal conflicts that separates them from the unified process of beingness. But the general public can't experience that. So until we realize what the Summoner Monk is involved, we may go off in tangents trying to interpret the meanings of what is said. But when we look at it from the level of a disciple and a teacher relationship, and not as someone giving a sermon on a pulpit or on a mountaintop for the general public, we're going to experience something entirely different, far more intimate with the creative process and with the God nature locked up in ourselves. Number one, Jesus attained his Christhood. That Christhood is present in all of us when you recognize it and when you realize it. That's why he says, "As many as received me, to them gave me the power to become sons of God." When you recognize your Christhood in you, you are a living example of the sons of God, the Christ power. But it's in you. The disciple is one who takes on the responsibility to make the transformation from inside. When he takes this responsibility to make this transformation from inside, he needs direction. And how is he to know that this direction that he's going in is going to be of a value? It's like you try to teach somebody something to do, and if you don't give them some standards to work by, how are they going to know they're making progress? So those 12 disciples were given certain standards to work with. Therefore, the very first word in one of the measurements of the inward growth is blessed. Have you ever thought of that? How can that be for the multitude? It's not something intended for the multitude. It would be something intended for someone who is involved in an intimate connectedness with a teacher. Some type of transformation that must occur in that person's internal nature to raise them from a level of self-destruction to a level of self-acceptance and self-effulgence. You can't get this transformation just openly saying it on a pulpit or reading it from a book. All the readings of how to drive a car doesn't get you behind the wheel. And equally true, all the readings of the scriptural writings will not transform you from inside your nature. It'll get you thinking along those lines. It may commit you to want to find out what can be done. And until you get behind that wheel, or until you get to that internal transmutation, that internal transformation as an individual from a grass level of behavior to a more refined level of behavior, you need help. You need some type of a monitoring process to get you there. You wouldn't know if you're going right or wrong. And especially when one is trying to realize his God nature, it's not an easy thing to realize. So those statements have very, very deep psychophysical therapeutic processes involved with them. But the average person will not know that until they encounter it and work with it, and then it begins to open up. Let's take one, and I'll work it through with you, so you can understand it. When you go back to read it now, don't read it like an ordinary person reading it. Read it as one who has been initiated into the inner awareness of your in-depth qualities, and let it unfold for you. It's a formula, number one. It's more than just a statement. It's actually a very deep psychophysical spiritual formula for unlocking the reservoir of your higher potential. But you don't know that. And a teacher can't up and dump it like that in the public. You can't expect somebody to tell you how to do something which be unprepared like that in the general public. He knew his disciples were on the path. He knew there were a lot of people around. But he had to give them, for the time he was allotted to stay with them, data or insight, all the necessary methods of how to make the internal transformation, along with he personally transforming them by being among them. That's why a living person is more important to extract a tooth from your mouth than one in a book. You can read of all the great dentists, the take teeth out of the mouth, you know. But you need a living one to, no matter how he is, you need him to take that one out of your mouth. And so you do need some living person to integrate for you the qualities of a spiritual life. Years ago, when I used to read and I studied to be a priest, you know, all these things were so far-fetched. And yet, I was fortunate to meet Yogananda. And living in the body, I didn't do more than the experience did, was to pull together certain internal qualities for me to center me so that I can open from within myself what the real truths are all about. And it comes back to this Sermon on the Mount. So, blessed when we think of this word, do you realize what a tremendous power is imparted to the initiate not just the general public, because the general public is not involved in the process. It's the disciples were involved in the process. They were empowered right away with, because a realized man can't say something that he cannot demonstrate. That's his realization. He has to live his own words. God, men live their words. So if he said, blessed are they, right away he's pouring out subtle transformations within the mechanism of the listener. The multitude may get some kind of a exchange, but the in-depth transmutation, the in-depth transformation is in the student that is learning to unfold. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, right? The very first real formula. Reading it or hearing it like that to the layman, could say, well, poor in spirit means what? It can be stupid, cheap, lacking. And if I don't do anything, I'll inherit heaven. And you can get all kind of notions about the whole statement and never really get an internal transmutation of what is intended between the realized man and the student who is on the path. Years ago, when I came across it, I too labored under that situation, not knowing what was the real transmutation and the real accomplishment of that statement. But when it was revealed and pulled together by the teacher, then qualities open for the first time. What we call blessed is a gradual permeation of the whole physical body going into a state of relaxation. All the tension and the stress that the body has been subjected to prior to that moment begins to recede. There's a quality that comes in. Your breathing expands, and there's a sense of cellular washing, a sense of cellular cleansing starts to occur. Anyone who has pursued meditation will tell you, in the early stages of their meditation, life can be pretty miserable, because all the aggravations come up to aggravate you and distract you, and before you know it, you wish you never got into this process of wanting to know about the creative principles of God. But suffer it to be so. This is the way of truth. That's the way we have to go. You have to be cleansed up. And it's not just taking a bath or stop eating wrong foods. It's another type of cleansing that is going to occur now from your inward nature. But that is not obvious at the moment. Only when this teacher and the student has set up a bond, then this exchange occurs. Within 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or any moment, you can feel a sort of a flushing system occurring in you. And you really know something is going on from a very subtle level. You may not understand it in the early stages, but if you stick with it, and that's what blessedness can be now, a sort of persistency, the whole mechanism starts to clean itself. It is becoming blissful. It's becoming purified. And it's not imagination. It's measurable. That's what's so fantastic about this process. We're fortunate to be living in a technological society where the brain is not accepting hearsay like we did centuries ago. We're testing, trying to validate. And though we may seem to be squandering, we have to hurt ourselves first before we improve. That's one of the beauties of this part of the world. The other part of the world, you can be very restricted and avoid the test, or don't want to get too deep into the measurements. Well, that's not healthy either. We need to measure, we need to validate, and not stumble blindly into it. The gradual physical changes in the body can be experienced, can be measured, to indicate you are making spiritual changes in your nature. Now, blessed are the poor in spirit. Most of us are all programmed with this word poor, but we remain poor all our lives. It's not intended that you should be poor, because even Jesus at a later date says, the poor you'll always have, me, not all the time. You see? So it's not that type of a poverty they're talking about, but we can program ourselves to that type of understanding of the word poor and feel very depressed, why me, Lord, why me, and never really understand what is it involving us in. Some of us have thought that the word poor means to be humble. Blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the humble in spirit. That's not 100% true either when it comes to the teacher and the student. It is all right for the general public to interpret it that way, and they get ready for the actual interaction with the living teacher or someone who is realized. But the actual thing that is occurring in poor in spirit is you don't know when the teacher will come into your life. If you did know, then you're rich in spirit and you don't really need a teacher. And so he said, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who attune themselves and wait for the moment when this influx of spirituality will come into their life, preparing them. The more you wait and let it come, it begins to manifest in your life. Now, in the Eastern tradition, they say, when the student is ready, the master is there. Well, how can he be ready if he's rich in spirit? He has to be ready only when he's poor in spirit. But that poor in spirit don't mean he's suffering from lack of. It's that a sense of readiness has been reached where the timing of the teacher and the student are going to lock into each other, and the exchange of realization and the switching on of the two individuals will bond. For example, at the River Jordan there lived a man whose name was John, and he performed a ceremony called baptism by using water. And many people came to be baptized by him. Yet the man John said, I baptize you by water, but there come one who will baptize you by spirit. And that even that one, he couldn't, he's not worthy enough to untie that person's shoe. And they kept telling the people that all the time. Then later on, another man came, and the moment he arrived on the scene, he looked all around, he said, "There is no man born of woman greater than John, who is Elijah that has come. But how can this person suddenly arrive on the scene, look at this individual performing his work, and openly declare what he thinks this person is? Unless there got to be some connectedness, some exchange occurring between the two of them." Then he walks up to John and says, "Baptize me." Well, John looks at him and says, "No, you baptize me." But picture for one moment two grown-up fellows arguing who should throw the water at each other's head. It don't sound as if it's in depth yet. But in preference of the relationship, John condescends and baptizes the stranger, and he was Jesus. And lo and behold, John saw a dove descending and heard the voice saying, "This is my beloved son, in whom I'm well pleased." An exchange, an interconnectedness occurred. Now, that type of interconnectedness is carried on by Jesus to his own disciples when he goes out to work with them. He couldn't carry that to the general public because the general public aren't ready for it. But those 12 men who were there waiting for more instruction on how to open their inner nature to carry on, they needed the exchange. And so he had to give them the formulas in different ways of their own internal nature. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." I said it's a moment of timing when you meet with a teacher. Jesus, after he was baptized, walked away from the river Jordan. And then it is said, John looked at the very people that were there sitting, and the three men, he says, "There goes your teacher," or "There goes your master." And it said that three individuals got up and walked after Jesus. Now, if the multitude knew what blessedness was right away, they would have already got up and gone. But they didn't know so, and even those who were selected by John, if it wasn't inferred to them that that is their moment of connectedness, they wouldn't even get up either. But it took another realized person to awaken them to the reality of that individual that was passing in front of them now, at that moment in time, that that was their connectedness. Now, it didn't say that Jesus turned around and said, "Hi, fellas, glad you're finding me." That would be a greater confirmation of the connectedness. Well, they said the three men got up and went after Jesus. And then Jesus went by slowly selecting people. And those moments are the moment of blessedness when the teacher comes into the life. You know that's your moment because you would never be exposed to it. Nothing would draw you there. You wouldn't have an intensification of the heart to go to it. So even you're sitting in a room hearing someone talking, it's that moment of intensification of exchange that locks you and pulls you. You know. Sometimes it's not immediate, but it's eventually you feel it and there's that particular unlocking of your heart. Now, it doesn't matter what the person is because the person isn't the real teacher. The person is only a focal point for the teacher. The real teacher is God. And the real student is still God. But We have to play the roles in human form of wanting to learn and wanting to serve. So those who've already made the contribution of learning and bridged that into the level of serving, they play the role of teacher. And those who haven't made that contribution, they are playing the role of the student. Well, who is it? It's all God nature working to pull us together. So in the Sermon on the Mount, this connectedness is reaching in much more into the nature of the human being, of getting the human being to recognize that a blessing or an unfoldment, a quality, is coming into their life at that moment when they meet. They will not meet for no other reason unless they're going to be enhanced or lifted up. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven, which simply guarantees now, at that moment when you come in contact with that realized person, his job of being fully realized or realized is to get you where? To the point of realization, and that's kingdom of heaven. He has to be already realized first before he can be used as a channel. He's got to arrive at the Christ nature before he can help you to arrive at your own Christ nature. So you see, the function of that relationship is very, very vital. That's why it says, suffer it to be so, for this is the way of righteousness. We can't get around it. But this creative principle works through human beings to lift up human beings. Another example of that interconnectedness, there was a saint, her name was Catherine, and she prayed every day to see God. And Jesus appeared to her. But in her mind, this is still Jesus, this is not God. And she prayed and prayed, I want to see God. And eventually, the form of Jesus dissolved, and she saw another form in its place. That other form was her own self looking at herself. Well, she could not take this unfoldment because it produced this sense of ego. Seeing yourself looking down at yourself in the embodiment of light, can you worship yourself as God? And yet, come let us make man in our own image, male and female created them. God breathed breath of life into man, and man became living soul. The I Am principle, the creative principle, is in all of us. We aspire to it, to go beyond all forms, and finally we end up looking at our own form. The glorification of the human form is what a human being can glorify. It can't glorify a pig or a cow. A cow would want a bigger cow to wash it. A dog would want a bigger dog to wash it. What would man want if he doesn't have some human form to relate to? So when this saint saw her own form, it was great, such a great shock in her. She said, no, no, give me back my Jesus. Out of the respect and out of the inward unfoldment and the transformation that is occurring in her, this form that led her to her own form was her way of paying respect. And today, when a person graduates from a school with honors and you ask him, what college did you graduate from? You don't say you graduate from your old college. Yeah, I just say from the University of Arizona, right? So you're going to have some point of reference, and this is very, very sound and natural and healthy. But when you look inside and you realize your true nature, and those who have come before to help you get there, they're only the sounding board to make you feel a sense of bonding, sense of interrelationship. So you can see that all great men pay reverence to someone that went before them. In the Sermon on the Mount, this very first exposure of the Beatitude is to prepare the person for the relationship with the teacher. The timing that the teacher comes into their life, or that individual comes into their life, to get them to go to the full realization of their life, Kingdom of Heaven, to start from no understanding and arrive at the highest understanding. We all seek to know the truth, but are we ready? We don't know when we're ready. We don't know a realized master. Can we find a realized master? What would tell us somebody's realized? But if a realized master would find us, that would be more accurate. Someone has to come into your life to pull you up to that level. So somebody once asked me, why don't you go to India? And I said, years ago, if I went to India, I wouldn't know a realized teacher from a non-realized one. But I'm staying right where I am, and if they are realized, they'll find me. And for sure, it worked that way. When the time came, that person found me. But then later when I wrote that teacher, I said, what constitutes readiness in a student? Because I don't know if I'm ready, and why did you come into my life? And they wrote on the piece of paper one word. There was not a single piece of paper absent from the one word. This was Yogananda. He wrote the word on both sides. The one word he wrote was frustration. All over the whole world. When you're totally frustrated, and that's the truth, poor in spirit now, or the time when you think you can't go any further, then this creative consciousness comes into your life and pulls you forward. It's a moment in time when you are ready. That's what they say, when the student is ready. Because then you don't have any questions to ask. You are ready now to allow the transformation of the heart to begin instead of a transformation of the brain. You see, you have to empty the brain, like in Zen Buddhism, before you can have the enlightenment. And emptying the brain simply means you gotta quit your analysis. So when you close your eyes to meditate, the most obvious thing you would want to do is analyze what's going on inside your head. But you can never realize yourself if you keep analyzing, because you're gonna push away the reality of your nature. You have to quit analyzing and watch. And that transformation that occurs when you quit analyzing, it releases the consciousness right back into the whole spirit or heaven. All the rest of the Beatitudes are centered on this internal relationship between a teacher and a disciple. It's not a type of code for the general public. When the general public is ready to work with this process, they will be pulled into it. And this is an ongoing process. It wouldn't stop. Not here, maybe in the future. There will always be realized men coming into the world to make us realize our true nature. That's why when the student takes to the path of truth and the teacher comes into his life or her life, that's the blessed moment. That's why the first word in the attitude of how to be, that's why they're called Beatitudes. Being in a state of receptiveness and in a state to be transformed. That blessedness is the transformation, because it's hooking up. It's like plugging in to the socket to charge up. It's like you are stalled out there with your car and you're waving your hand for somebody to stop. And 10 cars may pass, but eventually someone will stop. And that one that stopped is that person that gives you the boost. And they go their way. But you'll always remember you got the boost to go on your own. Equally true, the relationship with the student and the teacher is that principle. They give you the boost to move you on to the reality of your true nature. They don't run your life. They don't think for you. But they hand you the charge that is necessary, which is called the master power. The master power works. Years ago, I used to call it my master charge. Better to have master charge from that level, you know, because it starts to put things into proper perspective for your life. And then you start to see that the things that you want to experience begins to manifest. One more aspect of looking at those Beatitudes that is never emphasized is the commitment that goes with the experience. If you live any one of those ideas in that formula as a student of truth, every attempt to live it opens the inner chakras or centers of energy. In today's terminology, chakras are your endocrine systems. The endocrine system does control all the precipitation of the traumatic action that your body has been subjected to in the womb, right up to your present state of self-understanding. But because cells are atomic in nature, the memory bank of previous behavior are locked up in that energy field. And you and I carry a certain quantum of memory bank, unfinished experiences that must come to the surface to be resolved. We can't all resolve it right away because the toll is too great on the body. And illness is one measurement of why the body can't cope with all the problems accumulated in the memory bank. And so, when we realize that health is interwoven with spirituality, it is very, very important that we begin to reach out for realized people who have access to the source of life. And by their accomplishment, they can resolve some of the conditions that our bodies are not able to resolve. All realized men, from whatever occupation they come from, prior to their realization, end up becoming what? Therapists. Like it or not. They don't have anything else left because Jesus started off as a carpenter and ended up as a therapist. Healing the world's sickness, right? And he sent out the disciples to do what? Go heal the sick. And his disciples were fishermen. Our society is our brothers and sisters. Our whole universe is our brothers and sisters. It's one cosmic family. So God, in the actual observation level, is health. How could we function and see someone sick and not be concerned? Because when we are sick, we are concerned and others are concerned. A common bond pulls us together in reference to life, health. So realizing ourselves is to get us to the point where we have access to this source of life, that we can feed it back into those who are less fortunate in resolving their problems, so it gives them a boost to resolve it. The beatitude, or the attitude of being, is a preparation that allows you now to take the responsibility of cleaning up yourself. To take the responsibility of not being afraid that another person is ahead of you in realization and can be an asset to you in your struggle to realize yourself. When I was a child, I was always worried that somebody knew more than me. And so my father says, "Oh, you think you're so smart? I'll tell you what. Outside of this house, there's somebody smarter than you." And at the same time, outside of this house, there's somebody stupid more than you. Where are you now? After a while, I said, "Oh, I'm in the middle." "Good boy, you're smart." He says, "Now, the guy that is smarter outside than you, there's somebody smarter than him somewhere along the road. And the guy who's stupid than him is you, right?" "So where's that guy standing?" I said, "He's in the middle." He said, "Well, start thinking all the way down the road like that." I said, "Oh boy." It woke me up to myself that we all are interacting on our own consciousness. And that's where we come back to this inner exchange of healing. The more we realize the sun and the moon is an interconnectedness, we will begin to experience more and more Einstein's formula of the unified field. That we live in a unified field, and the connectedness of the unified field in its actual realization is your health in your daily life. The exchange of health has never been experienced more than between teacher and student, but in the family life, exchange of health has been exchanged. When a mother is sitting down and the child runs up and, "Mommy, I bumped my knee." And what does mommy do? Pick it up and kiss it and make it well. And what happens? The child jumps off her knee and runs off and play again. But do we realize what we did? We take it for granted that's mommy's role, but we never realize the deep in-depth exchange that's going on. By the same token, this is can be extended out into the whole family life and into the whole human life. The relationship of that interconnectedness. And that is what all these great teachers have all come to realize, that when they start centering themselves, they end up in heaven, not a place out in the sky. They find the actual reservoir of life bubbling up within the cellular structure, which has been referred to as Kundalini, the latent force field stored up in the human body. That's the Eastern term for cellular kinesis. Cellular kinesis is the modern technological term. The bioenergetic action that is locked up in your own cells, and as you become conscious of its existence, you can tap it. It makes itself felt as a quivering, as a heat, and is measurable in terms of immunity to breakdown and immunity to the body's reaction to any type of cuts that are taking longer to heal than before. As you begin to observe, these wounds begin to heal faster. One of the closest observation you can have that this power is working within you is the healing process that is locked up in you. And the realized men who realize it all tap into it. And so their greatest contribution to their students is to get the student to clean up himself, to get his healthiness back, so that he can now move on to help those who are in need. If the teacher can't be healthy, how is the student going to be healthy? If the teacher doesn't have access to the inner properties of this life principle, how is he going to help the student to find access to it? Let alone the multitude who are waiting for some kind of magical, dramatic experience. Not that the magical, dramatic experience don't exist. They do. But that is not the real internal transformation of the person. A magical transformation leaves you with a something for nothing attitude. It tends to weaken you because you will always believe that God owes it to you. And if he doesn't perform, you're disappointed. Whereas if you go through the process of learning of how you're structured and interconnecting with a loved one to give you a sense of compassionate growth, then the appreciation for God embodied in human life would make you more a real person and not live with a something for nothing attitude, you would realize all life is balanced. All life reciprocates. You're healthy for the first time. Healthy in the sense that you can pick up the responsibility of living and acting daily, moment to moment, your obligations without fear. This type of realization is the kind of peace that Jesus referred to. The peace I give, the world don't give. The world gives you 6 feet under the ground and may you rest in peace. Realized men don't give you that kind of peace. They don't give you tranquility. They give you the strength of consciousness to cope with your environment. And that is peace that passes all understanding. You don't understand how it works, yet you know moment to moment you're coping moment to moment, you're sticking it out. And anyone who has come any way in his life to accomplish anything knows that the gradual constancy of sticking things out is his strength. That is the Christ peace. You are living it, but you may not recognize it. You may not relate to it. But as soon as it becomes pointed out to you that is what you have actually accomplished, you realize that you have fulfilled the Beatitude. You have fulfilled those principles recommended on the Sermon on the Mount. You have lived it. It is in the daily activity, in the daily transformation, that you begin to see that you are living these formulas and the connectedness that goes on between you and loved ones. So, one time, a great man had a servant, and the servant was sick, and he decided he was going to go and see Jesus. Now, this man was a Roman, and Jesus was a Jew, and the servant was a Greek. But all the physicians tried to heal the servant and they couldn't. So the man decided to go and see Jesus. Yet in his own mind he has conflict of the time. And he is coming to grips with his own reality by saying, if this man could only come to my house, he may not have to create any friction in my lifestyle or my peers. And so when he arrived, almost there, other people came to tell him, don't go and bother this man. And when he met Jesus, he simply asked, if you but say the word, my servant would be well. Now, this is putting a person into a tremendous position of realization and extension of connectedness. The realized man has only one quality that stands out, that he's realized. What he says can be actualized, can be actually manifest. That's the one quality he has achieved. He's achieved what God is, the spoken word in manifestation, in embodiment. He hasn't come any further or lesser. He has come to this total reality, the embodiment of his spoken word. And that's life itself, the very core of our being. It takes a great deal of understanding to go and confront someone, to want them to express that principle. Yet the request is made, if you say the word, my servant will be well. One can say, because he was a military man accustomed to giving orders, and so by rank and file, the pecking order of things, everything will act out accordingly. That could be his point of reference for saying that if this man is so great and realized, that he also would be in that particular control, and if he spoke everything along that internal psychophysical process will automatically respond. That's valid up to a certain point, that we do adhere to ultimatums by respect of the rank and file of things. But there's another law at work, far more beyond that. It is the sense of connectedness. when we transcend our fears and all those who would seem to close to us and would want us not to extend the boundary lines of our awareness in other fields of thinking, we the individual who feel the pull must go out to experience that pull beyond those limitations and those restrictions. This man felt a pull that transcended his Roman origin, his military training, to a connectedness of life that was pulling him, and his servant being Greek.